seen it that I mentioned so often but never explained so far. And I probably, if we are low on time, I probably skip the pitfalls. You can look that up yourself on the repository. It's just something to keep in mind if you combine overloading and templates. And the concept programming is really why we actually want to do that. And yeah, again, the repository, it's updated. I did some minor changes, so you can go and take a look. And again, ask questions if something is unclear. I first start off with just answering some questions that are left over from last time. We were wondering if SizeOf needs anything. SizeOf works right out of the box. You don't need any header for this. So it's built in. You don't need any include. Second off, I mentioned that you cannot catch an assertion that fails. That's not entirely true. You actually are able to catch the thing, but it's not meant to be done like that. So if you want to catch something, throw an error. And also, as a rule of thumb, use asserts to make sure you, as a programmer, didn't mess up. So basically, if an assertion fails, it means you, as a programmer, failed to like take into account something. For example, if you have a function that is called square root and it takes an integer, and you specify clearly in the documentation, please only insert positive numbers. You can, for example, there in that case, you made it clear and you don't care if the user is stupid and puts in a negative. But just if you like guarantee something, or if you say, well, out of this function, you always get a number higher than 10, assert that. Because if you like guarantee it and it doesn't happen, you messed up. And so assertions are for you as a programmer, and actual errors are there to like handle unexpected input from the user, or just to really handle unexpected situations. Then we had the question last time if templates actually do what I told you that they do. So basically, if I have three custom written classes, I have this class here, custom class for integers. You see I have a bunch of integers in here. Then I have the same class. I copy-pasted it basically, and I just changed the type down here. Now it's three doubles. And again, for three floats. And then I just I do some printing and calling some types. Nothing fancy, just three handwritten classes. And as you see, since the type is the only thing that changed in this class, we can write a template for this. And it's just custom class, it's template T, and it has this type. And it does exactly the same as the version before. It looks exactly the same. And now if you compare the sizes, I'm here in this folder where you see we had, I just did LL in this folder. So you see I have here 9 handwritten and templated. And now with demonstrating to you, I actually compiled these things. And if I do now LL, we have the two binary or executables. And you see that they differ only by 2 bytes. Don't ask me why we have a difference of 2 bytes, but I don't really care if my binary is 2 bytes smaller or larger. And especially since the template version is 2 bytes smaller, so it's better. Yeah, so bottom line, it's the same amount of binary. And just to show you that if we insert some crazy, or not crazy, but some meta template stuff, let's say this print type here has a void as a return type, right? And now I just change. I just change this. So basically what I do now is I ask get type of void and 800. And what get type does, it calls itself again with a number smaller, -1. And so it's a recursion. And it stops if we hit 0. So I have a specialization, a partial specialization for the case where my integer is 0. And there it actually types t to type. And then it goes all the way back. Then t is type. Then get type of t and 1 is t, and so on and so forth. So basically, this happens 800 down the line and comes back again. So it's a lot of things going on. And The question is, does it affect the size of the final binary? It shouldn't, because I pretend that this stuff happens during compile time. So let's compile this. You see it compiles down there. And now let's go back and check again. Well, as you can see, the templated version here is exactly the same size. Even though I changed and had this meta template code going on, in the final binary, you don't see this code. It didn't change by a byte. So for the final binary, it looks like you can basically throw away all the stuff up here and just write down void. It has the exact same effect. And I hope that this convinces you that it's the same as if you were to write it by hand.
So can type ID identify all different types? Like, is there any time that whatever this output is, I don't know if it's output format that type ID gives you, but is it possible that there's two different types that have the same output with type ID?
No. If you have like some type def, again, if you type def integer to spin type, and then you do type ID of spin type and integer, it will be the same. But only because spin type actually is an integer. But so you can have different stuff in type def that gives you the same thing, but this different stuff in the end is the same again. So basically, if I do type def integer to spin type and integer will behave the same if put in type def in type ID. So these were just some side remarks concerning questions from last time. I just repeat very briefly the two things we saw last time. First one was a full specialization. We have this template here. It's a print template. It takes just the type T and it prints it in a nice green color. And now since we don't like integer, we do a fully specialized version and just print, well, we cannot print integers for what reason whatsoever. And you see here, again, I use template just like this without any parameters. And then I specify here my specialization. And again, I also have to change this integer, right? This was originally a T. But since I specialize it, I have to change all the T's with int. And now we have an integer, a double, and a string. And we like to print those. And well, integers cannot be printed. And the rest is fine. So that's basically how the fully specialized templates work. And also, sometimes important, a fully specialized template is instantiated. If you use it or not, doesn't matter. If you have a fully specialized template around, it basically means it has no freedom anymore in types. You determined every type. And so it's basically like a normal file. It's just instantiated. So if I get rid of this print, a normal template wouldn't be instantiated since you don't use it. But a fully specialized template is still instantiated. If you do optimization, the compiler will get rid of this function anyway since it's not used, but it will do so with any other function, right? So it's just sometimes important to keep in mind that a fully specialized version is instantiated, even if you don't use it. Yeah, but again, don't worry too much about that. The compiler will throw out everything that you don't use. Then we had the partial specialization. Here I have a print pair function. It takes a pair of T and U, and it prints just the first and the second element, like this. And it's no problem to do type deduction even if T and U are somehow in another construction. So if I hand a pair, if I have a print pair and I give it a pair, this function will be able to detect T and U, even though you gave it a pair. But you can imagine that like a pattern, you give it a certain pattern, and you have here a certain pattern, but you leave the blanks out. T and U would be the blanks. And then it compares the pattern that you give to the ones you have there, and it will figure out the blanks. And now again, we don't want to print a pair that has an integer as a first element. And what I do here is I do a partial specialization. I say, well, U is still free, but the first one here, integer, is specialized. And again, I'm just printing out, well, we cannot print pairs with integer as a first. And this looks like this. The first one is an, oh, I didn't show you the code, but here we have a double and an integer, so it's fine, we can print it. And here we have a double and a double, we can print it. And the other ones, sorry, the one that we couldn't print was one with integer and integer, and integer and double. Since the first element is integer, it's specialized and we cannot use it. Yes?
Is there a way to generalize such that any combination of T and U, as long as it's integer,
Yeah, you could basically say, if you get an integer, I should say, or print it in yellow, and if I get an integer and a double, I should print it in green, or whatever. That works. So, your question would be if I...
If you had, like, for example, the second being an integer, and the first being anything, and then there's an element...
You want to basically say, whenever we have some kind of integer
yes.
around, don't print it.
Yes,
no problem. We just do the same... I just copy this, and I do just the opposite. I mean, I don't have to rename T. I just do it like this. And now, you can, but that's again meta template. So you could do it, but I would probably do it like this. But yeah, you can do some fancy stuff with, let's say, some is. On is one integer of, and then you hand two types, T and U, and then it gives you back true if, but in the end, this is one integer will use the same specialization techniques that I use right here. You can just hide it and make it look a little nicer, but the technique is exactly the same.
I'm imagining if you had T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
Yeah, you can also generalize it in the sense that you're not bound to like have to write it for 2, 3, 4, 5 arguments. It works with C++11, you have variadic templates. So you can basically, you can write the following. Template is one int. And here you just do it like this. And so that basically means you can give me as many template arguments as you want. And then you have to act accordingly to figure out which one. But yeah, you can get away from the hard-coded version where you have to have 1, 2, 3, 4, and that's no problem. So is everything clear with the fully specialized and the partial specialized templates? In that case, we go over, and yeah, just why do we want to have the, or what are the like real benefits of having fully specialized stuff? For example, the standard vector of bool is actually something different than the vector you use normally. Why? Because the bool only needs one bit as an information, but the smallest entity is a character or a byte. And you basically, if you do a normal vector of bool, you waste just an enormous amount of space because you store one bit in 8 bits. And so, if you type standard vector of bool like that, you actually get a different implementation of the vector. You get a bit set. You don't recognize it. You can still use it as a vector, but the nice thing is you can do a special implementation for certain types just to optimize it. And the user will never know. The user can still use vector of bool and think in their head it's a normal vector where you have each bool sitting beside each other. But internally, it's 8 bools sitting in one byte. So that's why fully specialized or also partial specializations are really useful, just to choose the optimal implementation without changing the interface. So it looks exactly the same. So then let's go on to Sphene. I show you the following two functions. We have a template function. And this function takes as an argument, or a parameter, a T size type, like this. So it just assumes that T has a type def called size type. I mean, it just if you put in, and now the question is, what happens if you put in something that doesn't? I have a second function that is just, it takes just the T, and it says, well, this guy has no size type, And here it says, well, this guy has a size type. Now we have a struct foo that actually has this size type. And then we call it with just different types. We call it with foo. We call it with integer. Now, why do I have to have the angle brackets here? Why can I not do deduction? Well, because this guy up here doesn't actually have to do anything, or is not a T. This is a T size type. It cannot be, T cannot be deduced. So if this were, if this is a T here, you can do deduction, but since it's not, since it's the size type, you have to actually hand in the type. And now it tells me, well, foo has the size type, and integer has no size type. But now the question is, why does it work with integers? I mean, the compiler comes, the compiler sees the following. It sees, well, we have function, and we should call it with an integer, or instantiate it, the function with an integer and call it with 10. Now, what does the compiler do? The compiler comes up here. I mean, how does the compiler know which one of those to take? I mean, for you as a program, it's obviously, well, don't take this one since there's a size type, and I know that size type that an integer doesn't have a size type. But how does the compiler do it? The central technique, or how it does it, it tries this function, and it sees that it fails. The compiler tries in size type, and then it realizes, well, integer doesn't seem to be, or doesn't appear to have a size type. And then the compiler goes on and says, well, perhaps this one works, and it works, and so it picks this one. And so that's what Sphene is all about. Sphene just means substitution failure is not an error. So integer fails to substitute in the first template, and it just is ignored and it goes on. It's not, it doesn't raise an error. Yes, please?
So in this case, is the ordering of declaration for the, or definition of the template important?
No, it isn't. It is for, that's also in the part six, the pitfalls there, the ordering is actually important, but I could just put this up here. Still works.
So how does it, you know, which one to try first?
We have no ambiguity here. Foo cannot get into this template because it's not convertible to an integer. I mean, you see, I call foo with 10. And foo cannot actually get converted to 10. So that's how the compiler knows this one cannot be picked for foo. And the compiler knows this one cannot be picked by an integer. So that's actually how the compiler knows which one to pick. If I were to write here an integer, I mean, now this is valid for foo, because foo can be called with this function, and it passes a 10, and the 10 is obviously an integer. Well, you have, again, you have ambiguity here, right there. You see, this is, again, illegal. I will show you how you can get rid of this, because it's ugly. You cannot do, yeah, you can do way more if you could get rid of this ambiguity problem. But right now, the important thing that you have to, like, keep in mind is that whenever the compiler tries to instantiate a function, a template function, and it sees that the substitution doesn't work, it just doesn't treat it as an error. If it at some point runs out of templates to try, it will tell you, well, I haven't found any template that where I was able to substitute the type in, and then you get an actual error. And as soon as there are like two templates that are like the same or that are both available, you will get an ambiguity error. Now,
and then ambiguity error is a
compile time error.
So it doesn't let you compile?
No. That's exactly, it's the same as with the mean function, where I had the integer mean function, double mean function, and I called it with a long double. The compiler didn't know, do I have to pick the integer or the double version? It's also an ambiguity. And so that's why it doesn't work. Now, but why is it so, or why is this Sphene such an important concept? Why does it enable so much? And that's what I'm going to hopefully come in or show you in this part. In this part, we have some template, and it checks if an object that you hand in has the type def size of size type. And so I can ask you, does foo have size type? Obviously, yes. Does bar have size type? No. Does an integer have size type? We know it already from the previous example, it doesn't. The good question is, does a standard vector of integer have a size type? You probably guess, yeah, it has one. And we can compile this and just run it. And it tells me, yeah, bar doesn't have one. Foo has one. Integer doesn't have a type or a size type. And standard vector has, again, a size type. And with this, I'll show you how it works, how we can find out this. But we can actually retrieve information from a type during compile time. And for the vector, you could also just have guessed it by looking through the documentation here. It states, so this is just a standard vector documentation. And here it states, well, yes, the vector has a size type. And it's actually part of a concept. So there's a concept, and this concept requires. This is just a standard vector. And here you can just check, yeah, it has actually a size type. It's not a bug. It's not that my has size type thing messed up. The vector actually has a size type. And now, how does this work? We have a struct. It's called size type, has size type. We handed in one template parameter, t. And then again, you will see this enum value equal and then two size of checks all the time if we do this analysis of a type during compile time. What I actually do here, I say, well, I have a check. This check takes a pointer of u size type. And then I have another check, and it takes just whatever. It's very eddic. And so the one that takes whatever is double. And the one that actually takes the size type is character. So what I want to compare is the return value of this check. If it's the same as char, that means that this one got picked, which means that there is a size type around. If there is no size type around, this one cannot get picked. And so then this gets picked, and then the size of the double is not equal to the size of the character. This is completely different from what you've seen with the mean trait. The mean trait uses overload to achieve to find out what's going on. Here, we use SFINET to find out if we have the size type or if we don't. You can see this in the fact that I have to template this. You see in the mean case, or in my mean trait, was around here. You see we had, for the use double identifier, I just had two static functions. And I used the overload to get what I wanted here. But in this example here, I cannot just use static functions. I use templated static functions. And I used SFINET to get the information I want. Because, yeah, again, this cannot get picked if there is no size type around. And I just call it with null because null can get converted to a pointer, or null is the valid pointer. And so it doesn't really matter what size type is. Size type just has to be a type, because a pointer to whatever type can be assigned to null, or null can be assigned to those pointers. Is this clear so far? Also, just as a side remark, I think the question was asked in the first one, if it's legal to do something like this, where I have a T, and then I have an S that depends on the T, and I think it's actually legal. Let me just double check this. So basically, the second one should be default constructed. Yeah, it works. So you can do stuff like this. I think in the first lesson, I said that this is not possible, but I probably just forgot the type name, because if you forget the type name, it doesn't compile. That's probably why I thought it doesn't work, but it actually works, just as a side note. So now we can go on and do even more stuff with this Sphene. So here I do a check if something is a class. The program looks like this. I have a class, a foo struct, and the struct is a class type. Basically, a struct and a class, both keywords are equivalent with just some minor details. Then the bar class is obviously a class. The enum, bats enum, is no class type. Double is also no class type, and the integer is also not a class. And bottom line is everything that you can know as a programmer, the compiler can as well. So, and that's really important to keep in mind, because every time you think, well, I want to pick this function if it's a class, and I want to pick this function if it's not a class, you can do that. Everything you can know about the code, the compiler can as well. And this is the means how you find it out. And again, here are my three objects, just the struct, the class, and the enum. And here we do it like this. We just, again, we call this check with T, and we pass a null. And in this version here, in the character version, we expect a method pointer, or a pointer to a member function of you that doesn't take any arguments and doesn't return anything. Now, how can I guarantee, or how are we guaranteed that every function, that every class has one of those member functions? Well, it's a destructor. You cannot pass any arguments to the destructor, and the destructor doesn't return anything. And every class type has a destructor, if you define it or not. If you don't define it, it's default constructor. Destructor. And so we are guaranteed that every class type does have at least one of those guys around. And that's how we can identify the class, with just saying, well, we want to have a pointer to a member function. And you see this pattern all over again with the two checks, where you check against something that you want in here, and where you catch everything else in here, and then you compare the sizes. That's really how you want to do it. Another example is just to show you that it's really, that you can really find out basically everything. If I...
So you can't distinguish between struct and class?
Sorry?
You can't distinguish between struct and class?
No, but a struct and a class are basically the same. The only difference between a struct and a class is that the class is default private and the struct is default public. You can derive from struct, you can derive classes from struct, no problem. And you can also do private in a struct. It's just from C, the struct was meant as just as a container for data and not for methods. But then with C++.
C++ structures can have like member functions.
Yeah, exactly, like this. You see I have a struct bar and it can have a void print, no problem. So they basically behave the same way. With the difference, if I write in here, if I write here some integer I, and I write here one integer I, this one is actually private, and this is public.
If that one's a class, if line
15
is a class.
Oh, sorry, of course. This would need to be a class. And now, if I were to ask you which one of those objects has a print function that doesn't take any arguments and returns void, which one would you give me? I mean, you could look at the code and tell me, yeah, foo does have a print function that doesn't take anything and returns void. Bar doesn't, and foo and bots doesn't have a print function, because it's not called print, it's called no print. Even though it's it doesn't take anything, but it has the wrong name. I mean, I'm looking for a print function. And so here I have, again, this object that I'll show you in a second. It's just a hasPrint method. And if I run this, it just tells me, well, foo has a print, bar doesn't, and bots also doesn't have one. And you can really find every method with the exact signature you want. With signature, I mean that you can specify, is it void? Does it take an integer? And here is how it works. Again, we do this check. Then we have, again, these two check functions, one double, one char rector. It's the same all the time. And then here we pass uprint to this wrap. And in wrap up here, we specify, this is a template that takes a method pointer. And here we specify exactly what we want. We want a function that is void, returns void, and doesn't take anything. And so that's how it recognizes the right one. Because even if, like bar has an actual print function. So it tries to get wrap print instantiated, but it cannot get it instantiated because the bar print doesn't follow the signature. The bar print has an integer here. And now if I run it with integer up there, you will see that foo doesn't have a print function, and bar now has one, because the signature matches.
You have to specify void?
In the front?
No.
Or in the back? No, you don't. It's just for readability. So you could just write it like this. It's just perfectly fine. And these are just the 3D examples where you can find out information about your objects. And now, why would we want to do that? A nice example that I have here is some function, and this function should behave differently if we have a type that is addable than if it's not. So if we pass something that you can add, it will actually do some addition. And if you pass something that doesn't add or that is not able to add, it just calls a entirely different function, even though it's called exactly the same. And I hope you see that that's quite useful, because you can have different behavior for types with different properties. And here it doesn't matter how the addition is implemented. I have my struct foo, and I have an external addition operator. And here I have my struct bar, and it has just an internal addition. And here I have my struct no plus, and yeah, basically that doesn't have a plus, so it's not addable. And we use fine to enable and disable functions. And this function would look like this. It's a void function. It takes some type and it does some addition. But now we have to make sure that this function gets shut down if something enters that is not addable, or that this template shouldn't be legal to use for stuff that isn't addable. And the way you do it is with, again, this type and type name only serves the purpose of getting back what enable if computes. So enable if says, well, if this is true, I will return void. If it's not, I don't return anything. So basically, there is no type around. And so we fail with a, we cannot substitute the template, because we need a type here. And if this one is false, it just doesn't have the type. Just a second. Here you see how I implemented enable if. Basically, if I can give it the condition and the type, and it's just lazy and doesn't do anything, and then I do a partial specialization, I say, well, if it's true, you have a type def that is called type, and it maps to T. So it looks a bit complicated at first, but imagine this guy as, if this boost has plus is true, you get a void, and if it's not true, it doesn't instantiate. It fails. And that's exactly how we can shut down this function for stuff that has no addition. I do the same for a second function, but here I just negate the boost has plus value. So I enable this second function for everything that doesn't have any addition.
So an environment programmer would attempt addition on something that doesn't have addition?
Yeah, no, but the nice thing is if you just had one template with addition, you just fail horribly. You cannot even compile it. If you do it like this, you can do a message, or you can do an alternative code where you say, well, you handed me a type that is not addable, but I still can do something with that. Yes?
I noticed that here we're using boost to check to see if the operator plus is
basically, I showed you here.
Maybe I missed it.
I showed you here that we can find out if it has a print method. I showed you that we can search for type. Basically, I didn't want to write the has plus. It wouldn't be a problem to write it down by hand. You just would end up again with something like this, where you have some has plus template that does exactly some checks and has some check function and just fails to substitute if there is no addition going available. And so don't worry, this serves solely the purpose of finding out if it has a plus. The important part here is that you can really shut down or enable and disable functions based on functionality. And you see here, we can get rid of the ambiguity problem right here, because we have a function, it's called exactly the same, and both functions take exactly the same t, right? This takes a template t const, and this also. And without enable and disable if, it would be completely ambiguous. I mean, you redefine the same function with the same template arguments. And so if I get rid of these two things here, I just get errors all over the place. But with the enable and disable if, you can really specify implementation based on like abilities. And now if I call this, tells me, yeah, we can call function for foo with a plus. We can call function for bar with a plus. No plus, we have to call a different function that is called, that is red. And now for an integer again, we can call the function with a plus. And yeah, bottom line, we can get rid of all the ambiguity problems and really make full use of really specializing functions based on functionality of the type that is handed in.
So that also has the type ID?
Yeah, exactly. This type macro here is just type ID name. Up here. So yeah, again, this type ID adds some numbers, because you see here I have a 3 foo. The 3 basically means 3 characters follow. And here it says 7, no plus, because 7. And it will have in there N for namespace, and if it's one of those guys is a template, it will have an I and then the template parameters. And trust me, if you do meta template programming and you have some really complicated recursive defined type, these things can get really, really long. So basically, I wrote an interpreter for a brainfuck. I don't know if some of you are familiar with the programming language. And it was an interpreter during compile time, and it handed out the result during compile time as an error, but the type was enormous. It took up, I mean, my entire screen froze just because it had to print this type on my terminal. So these things can get arbitrarily long. This is just the main purpose or the why Sphena is so remarkable, because you can really achieve all this behavior only because you have Sphena. Without the Sphena, you couldn't do this kind of stuff. Now, why I show you here an example where we actually use this enable and disable if to increase the functionality of some code by really, by a great amount, without losing any performance. So we make it more generic, and we don't lose any performance. First, just take a look at the following code. I have a vector. It's just called my vector. And my vector, it basically behaves like a normal vector. I can show you the class up here. It has a private standard vector. It has the access operator. It has the size. It has a copy constructor and an assignment operator. So you can basically, I mean, it's not the full functionality of standard vector, but you can basically do the same with those guys. And now we have my vector with integer, and I just want to initialize it with 10 elements that are 1. So, and yeah, I wrote a print function so it can do nice output. But now why can't I do something, or I would want to do something like this. I want to have my vector of double, and I want to initialize it with my integer vector. You probably all know from experience that that's quite tricky, so if I try this, nope, not gonna happen. Why not? Because my vector double doesn't have a constructor that takes in my vector integer. But I mean, it should be possible, right? I mean, since integer is convertible to double, why shouldn't this be possible? Now the same applies if, let's say we have my vector of bool, and I wanted to initialize it with a standard vector. Again, this is not possible because, well, we don't have a constructor for a standard vector. And again, why doesn't that work? I mean, it's a vector, and we want to rely on concept. We want to say if something is a vector concept, we want to like initialize it with other stuff that is also a vector concept. And yeah, the list goes on. If, for example, if we wanted the integer vector to be the same as the standard array, I mean, it should work. Or it makes no sense why it shouldn't. And here's the real beauty of the whole enable and disable if. Here, I have again my copy constructor. And I say, if enable if, so enable this copy constructor if the types are the same of my vector and u. U is the thing that comes in here. So that basically means if it finds the exact same thing that it is itself, it will call just the normal copy constructor. The exact same copy constructor I had over here in the first example. It will just call this copy constructor. But this is just enabled if the types are the same. Now, what happens if the types aren't the same? So here, I say if it's not the same, then I just do an assignment. I just do a normal assignment operation. And now if we go over to the assignment operation, again, I have my first one that is enabled if the types are the same. So this is, again, my normal assignment operator, the same I had in the first example. But now, if I have a different thing that is not the same as my vector, I do first, and I stated here, I assume that u is a vector concept. What I mean by that is I assume that it has a function size, and I assume that it has an access operator where I can read and write. So what I do is I resize my own internal vector to the same size as the right-hand side. After that, I loop over all the, or over size, and I just assign my right-hand side element I to my internal element I. I mean, this works even if this is an integer and this is a double. This is valid, right? Because an integer, you can state integer equal double or assignment double. That works perfectly fine. So you see, the only thing that I changed is my assignment operator and my copy constructor.
So what's this enable if?
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. The standard enable if is in the standard, C++ 11. So you don't have to write it yourself. And also the standard is same here, all this stuff. This all comes from the following. If you go again to the reference, you go to other, you will find the type trait. You see here it's C++ 11, but you can also find everything in Boost. So it's taken over directly from Boost. And then here on the side, you see everything that you can check. You don't have to write the stuff yourself. For example, is it an array? Is it assignable? Is T a base of U? Is it a class? Is it const? Is it constructible? You can find out basically everything with the type trait library here. And or is it a same? I use this one. Is it a scalar? Whatever. Is it trivially default constructible? I mean, the list goes on. Is void, is volatile, what you want. And so down at the bottom, you have enable if, and in the standard, you only have enable if. In Boost, you have had enable and disable if. But I mean, you can make a disable if just with negating the condition. But for me, first, when I tried, I just wrote disable if, and the standard told me, nope, doesn't happen. And I was confused for a second, but then I checked here, and I saw there is no disable if. So basically, this TypeTrade library does all this work I showed you before for you. You can just use the TypeTrade library for that. And that's exactly what I do here. I just use the standard enable if, and the standard is same. But now, why is it so much better to do it like this? Well, now I have my standard, or I can just run the program. Now I have my integer vector, and I just initialize it with my normal constructor. That worked before perfectly fine. But now I have my double vector, and I copy construct it and hand it the integer vector. Works perfectly fine. But now the second one, the second copy construct is chosen, the one that isn't for the same. Now I can do stuff like this. I can have my vector of character and hand it over a standard vector. I can like assign my character vector to my double vector. Just 97 is just the code for A. So that's why it's 97 here. Then I can assign a standard array to my integer vector. And we didn't lose any performance at all by enlarging the, or by making it more generic, because again, if we have the same type, it will use the faster, the own copy constructor and assignment operator. And only if the types differ, it chooses the other one. And yeah, so that's basically why it's so much more, or why it's so much more handy to work with concepts, because you can throw in everything that fulfills the concept. Like here, if we have something that is vector, a vector concept, and the types are assignable. So basically, if you have a vector of string and a vector of integer, it obviously doesn't work. But that also makes sense that that doesn't work. You would have you have to write your own assignment operator that takes a string and returns you, or returns an integer.
So what are the concepts like this would we use for the type of programming we do? Like, I understand this vector example. But so like, what do you use?
For example, I have some grid, and I have some other property that like needs to go in there, like a swap map. And the thing is, I'm not sure. I don't want to like have a fixed type. Let me show it like this. Let me say I have some like set. I have some class, and I want to set some property, right? And normally, I could say, well, this is some standard, or let me say, X. We could just like spell it out and say, yeah, this set property takes my property helper class X, and then it does some setting, it sets some stuff. But I don't, first of all, I need to declare this class before I state it here, right? And second, if I change the name somewhere, I have to change it all over the place. I mean, I have to go and change it everywhere. I mean, that's not such a problem. But the nice thing is, if you template this to T, and they just say, well, we have some T coming in here, and it just fulfills, I mean, perhaps I need an X access, and perhaps I need an, I don't know, an X question. But you can have like a concept where you say you can throw everything in there that has these two abilities. And so I don't have to worry about, I also don't need to declare whatever I put in here. That I don't need to. And so if I wanted to change like my random number generator, if I wanted to change like this set property class and write it totally different, as long as it still has this kind of abilities, I can still put it in. And I don't have to change a single line in this code. That's why I program mainly with a concept. And also if you start writing templates, you end up having your definition in your declaration. So you end up with classes. And so if I had a print, I also state what it does right in the class, just because it's templated. And now if I need many, or if I had a second class, let's call this class A, and now I had a template, class B. And now let's say I need B in here, and I have something that I need A in here. You run into troubles because it's cyclic, and you have a problem with the declaration. And now if I just say, well, I don't want to print B, I have some template, U, that prints me whatever U is, I don't need to declare B. I mean, class A doesn't need to know anything about class B. It just needs to know, well, I have some print function that is template, and I can take whatever fulfills the concept that it needs. And that's why I just also use templates a lot with just normal functions, just not to, I'm just way more, I have a bigger freedom in changing stuff because it just relies on the concept and I don't need to have any names. And yeah, that's why I like it quite a lot.
Yeah, so actually this problem can happen even with non-templated classes, right?
Yeah, but with non-templated classes, you can actually do a nice declaration and you do a CPP file where you have your thing. And you can also do that with templates, but it gets quite, yeah, you have again the problem with the instantiation and stuff.
Is this your files, like would you typically break up each template in class to a separate file, or do they all have to be in the same file then?
Yeah, I usually have like...
I guess this problem gets around it, if you template the...
Yeah.
U, and then it doesn't matter. Right?
Yeah, you don't need it, but I tend to have classes that are not templated, like a grid class, but that have a lot of template functions in there, because I don't want to specify what comes into these functions.
Right.
But so you don't actually need this guy up here, but the key is to have functions like this, so you don't need to worry about whatever goes in there. I have at the end just a little performance comparison for you. So I don't show you the actual code, just know this. In this example, I didn't use any templates. It's just inheritance and the type erasure and all this kind of stuff. I don't want to go into detail, but it can do the same thing that you saw before. We have a double vector and an int vector, and we can construct the double vector with the int vector. And I can show you up here the way you have, or just very briefly, the way you have to do it, you have to have a base class that is vector concept that basically specifies whatever the concept is. And then you inherit this vector concept to the int and double vector. And then you, since a derived class can be held by a pointer of the base class, you can pass it, for example, to this print function. And the print function doesn't take an int or a double vector, it just takes a vector concept. And so here I do a little benchmark. I have my high resolution clock from C++11. And I just do this copy construction, what is it, million times. And I want to see how long it takes. So,
does this need C++11?
Yeah, this needs C++11. For the clock. The clock, if you disable the clock, it works without. But I use the C++11 clock here. So it takes me like 1 second, 1.1 second. But the values differ a little, even though it's called high resolution clock. I think a high resolution clock just means that it'll pick the best clock that it finds. It doesn't actually guarantee you anything. If you work on like suboptimal hardware that doesn't have a super efficient timer, like obviously my laptop, it just picks something different. So now I do the exact same example, but in this time I have the example from before. I have my assignment and my copy constructor that are done with enable ifs. And so again, I can have my vector of double, I can have my vector of int, and This is static polymorphism. The example before was dynamic polymorphism. I do, again, the 1 million assignments. You can check this number is the same. I don't cheat here. And we run it, and whoop, that's a bit shorter. So before it took me like 1 second to do the task, now it's like a fraction of it. And now I say, well, let's make it a fair competition. I give the double vector, I give it a copy constructor that takes an explicit integer vector. So that's like the fastest way. I make a custom copy constructor for exactly the task I want, right? But it still has to go with the access over the concept. So let's see how this works out. So you agree with me, this should be way faster. It actually is. But if you compare it and if you do it a few times, you see it's still slower than the template approach.
What do you change there?
This is a dynamic polymorphism. And I gave the double vector. So basically, we want to perform this operation all over again. And I just gave the double vector an explicit constructor for an int vector. So it doesn't have to go over the base class and do all this casting. It can just, it knows how to handle an integer vector.
I guess I don't see why this is slower at all.
It is because of the following. If you have a vector concept, your access operator cannot have a type, because you want to use it for double and you want to use it for integer. The only way you can handle integer and double through the same interface is passing them as a void pointer. That's really the only way, and that's what's called type erasure. You erase, if you want to go from the derived class to your base class, you have to get rid of the type, because the base class doesn't know anything about the type. Actually, the only thing that the base type knows is this function here, type. But this gives me back this string. And so what it has to do, for example, for the print function, and this is really painful, it hurts in the runtime, it has to check, is vector type a double? And if it is, it calls my vector I, what gives me a void pointer. It has to get converted to a double pointer and then dereferenced again. So that's what makes it slow. And this is a type infusion right here. I infuse the type again. And here I do it just by really trying every possibility. And again, you wouldn't write code like this. I just wanted to show that we have the exact same functionality here. I mean, this code can do the same as the other one, but it's just a totally different technique. I mean,
what's the difference in compile time?
This is the dynamically. So here you don't have any difference, or at least you shouldn't be able to note it. Probably the thing that eats away your compile time the most is the clock, because the clock here is also, it does some dumb cast and it has some templates here. I figure this is probably the thing that needs the most. Actually, we don't do meta template programming here. The only thing that happens is instantiation of templates and instantiation of constructors. And so that's basically why you want to work with concepts rather than with actual classes. Just to finish up, I want to show you where you can go if you are interested or want to see more. I showed you in the beginning this template thing monster that calculates the biggest prime number that is smaller than 100. It actually doesn't compile, but it returns us the value that we are interested in. I also wrote the same code are in the same style as the compile time version in runtime. So if you want to take a look, this does exactly the same, and it also looks kind of the same. It's just runtime 97. You can take a look at the runtime version first and see how I do it there. And then you can take a look at the compile time version to see what happens there. Because you can really take it up a notch with the templates. You can pass templates to templates. I mean, the template parameter can also take templates. And then you can apply templates while you're in the template, and it gets. So for example, here I have some body thing that internally has a template apply that I apply an index to and retrieve a value again. And I have my meta if that you know from examples before. And yeah, I have my comparison types. And so really you can go a little further with this. And I wanted to make it as simple as possible, so you can take a look first at the compile time version. I don't use any for loops in here because you cannot use them during compile time. This works only with a recursion. And if you got the runtime version, you will get the compile time version as well. This will conclude the introduction to templates so far. And I think we covered most of the techniques. Again, you can only get a little more creative and complicated by passing more templates into templates, and apply templates in templates, in types, in templates, whatever you want. But yeah, that's about it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mario, for the interview.
Sure.